Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Poitvin Group conference call. I will now turn over the call to David Lepoitvin. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Back to School special conference call. Should be an interesting one. Expect to get a few questions, so I'll get right into it. So where are we now? As Donald Trump points out, stocks are hitting a new record high. The Dow's up 10.3% year to date. The Standard & Poor's 500 is 10.0. Not so good in Canada. I'm just going to give you some flash numbers here. The Toronto Stock Exchange minus 2.2. If you're an investor in Canadian bonds, which we don't have any, but you're minus 2 to minus 3% for the year, depending on your duration of your bond. Gold is up 16%. Again, these are all in U.S. dollars. But wait, hold the fort here. Canadian dollar year to date up 10.6. Well, we just did the math on the Standard & Poor's 500 up 10.0. So for Canadians, where could you possibly have gone? As I mentioned, Toronto Stock Exchange minus 2. That puts the U.S. market, despite the strong Canadian dollar, a little bit ahead at minus 0.6. The other thing that's happening is the Russell 2000, mid to smaller cap companies, you know, billion to $5 billion companies, are up only 3.1. So again, to a Canadian, that's kind of back of an S and minus 7 point something. So it's really a very interesting year that as for a Canadian. It's been very interesting. So what happened? So we had Bank of Canada who were May and June, despite first quarter GDP in Canada, very strong at 3.7. Bank of Canada came out as transitory. Their underlying fundamentals of the Canadian economy are weak. And it's very interesting how currency traders react to headlines. But the Bank of Canada, Canadian dollar was extremely out of favor. I got to say that there was probably a dozen clients that called us up after our last conference call and said, why do we have any Canadian dollars? Why do we have any? It just makes so much sense. The Bank of Canada is probably going to lower rates. The U.S. is going to raise. Why do we have any? And ironically, at that point in May, at 70, May, June, that 72-cent level, that was actually time to actually back up the truck on the Canadian dollar, because you got to remember information is baked into this. So it was already in the Canadian dollar, those expectations. And what happens is a reversal of expectations. So here we are today, and the expectation is the Bank of Canada is going to raise about 3 more times, and they're going to raise rates. And the expectation is, so it's flipped exactly the opposite. The expectation is only 30% that the U.S. will raise rates before the end of the year. So we've had exactly the opposite, and we've had a number of clients call and say, I'm worried about the Canadian dollar going higher, and should we have any U.S. dollars? Well, again, it's baked in, and I think probably the Bank of Canada rated expectations are overblown, and I think wildly overblown that the United States will not raise rates as well. So I wanted to talk about what it was the Bank of Canada saw to do a 180-degree turn in their policy. So what the Bank of Canada was reacting was, again, first quarter GDP came out of 3.7, and then very recently we had the second quarter coming in at 4.5%, off the charts. U.S. has been running 2, their last quarter was 3, but Canada's much stronger. So the Bank of Canada weighed in and said, that's it. Canada's so strong, we are going to raise rates. And they did it once. They signaled a hint, nudge, that we'll do it on October. And they felt the need to do it immediately. Now, let's remember, Bank of Canada, U.S. has held rates. In 2015, they lowered rates twice, from 1% of Bank of Canada rate to half. So they felt the need to undo the 2015 rate decreases, which were brought about because of the real struggles that were happening in Alberta from the energy patch, which was in a technical recession. Alberta bounced back somewhat, not in recession, not no longer declining, but no growth either. Now, so let's talk about the second quarter, and we'll talk about in Canada if it's sustainable. So I'm going to read to you a couple of snippets from an April 5th. So here we are. We're entering the second quarter. The Toronto Real Estate Board announced that the Greater Area Toronto Realtors reported 12,077 residential sales through their real estate MLS system in March. This represents a 17.7% increase compared to the 10,260 reported the year before. Further, the Toronto Real Estate Board, it has been encouraging to see that policymakers have not implemented any knee-jerk policies regarding the Greater Toronto housing market. Please don't spoil our party. We're making so much money on real estate flipping. Please don't do anything about it. So this is where we enter the quarter. Strong competition between buyers, again, real estate, between buyers continue to cause high levels of price growth in all major market segments. For the Toronto Real Estate Board market area as a whole, the average selling price was up 33.2%. This is where we entered quarter number two. The Canadian dollar was 74 and a smidge, so it then declined to 72. Again, we're looking at the past, so we've got a manufacturing began to come back 72 cents. As I've mentioned in previous calls, we feel very strongly that the purchasing power parity of the Canadian dollar is 80 cents. It was my strong view, I'm quite surprised to see it over 80. It was my strong view that the Canadian dollar needs to stay below 80 or else you're going to really impact manufacturing. But for the quarter that we're looking in hindsight at, manufacturing was coming off of very, very low levels, but it was improving. But the number one driver of the bust was retail spending. And retail spending is highly correlated to credit, and it's highly correlated to the housing market. And again, there is 9.5 million people that live not just in Toronto, but Hamilton, Oakville, what we call the Golden Horseshoe. That biggest population segment, about a third of Canada's population lives in that Golden Horseshoe. So it is driving the bus. 33% price appreciation. In fact, for the month, actually house prices were up 6% for the month. So Toronto decided that they were going to do something about high house prices, as BC did, but they went way beyond what BC did. The entire Golden Horseshoe was subject to a foreign buyer's tax. They implemented rent controls, which is very negative for further purchases, where someone who is an entrepreneur and makes an investment is now guided by the government about what they can charge for their product. So it's very interesting because here we are today, and house prices, this is incredible, but house prices in Toronto have declined from 936,000 to 720,000, or sorry, I might not have the numbers exactly, but it was a decline of $236,000 in house prices since that second quarter peak, which is quite incredible. And so when we look at that retail sales, the number one driver to second quarter GDP was car sales. Number one. The car sales in second quarter are annualizing more than 2 million units. 2 million units is way beyond the peak of 2006 for car sales, where the U.S. peaked at 17 million. We all know it's pretty close to a 10-to-1 population ratio. So we're going 2 million. It's way beyond, and it's being driven by credit. And credit is driving the bus, and what drives the bus on credit is surging house prices. Now with house prices down 236,000 or about 24% in price, the game changes because in Ontario, we've now seen 2 months in a row, and again, this doesn't show up in the second quarter because we're into the third quarter. We've seen in Ontario where house prices are declining, we've seen 2 months in a row of negative retail sales. Last month, negative 0.7. They were gaining 1% a month in the second quarter. So my reaction is, and we've had a lot of calls because people are saying, you know, I'm looking at my account and compared to May, I'm down X. And I go, well, what's driving that bus? I can assure everybody listening that it is 100% the Canadian dollar. Stocks are roughly flat since that time, and the Canadian dollar has gone up 13% since the low. 13%. So if stocks are flat or up 1 or 2, you do the math, your AT&T shares are down 10% when adjusted for Canadian. If we isolate the Canadian dollar accounts, we're actually doing exceptionally well. As I mentioned, Toronto Stock Exchange -2. Our Canadian accounts north of 10%. In the last call, I mentioned Canadian preferred stocks. It's been a home run. Our U.S. accounts in isolation are doing decent. They're doing what they're supposed to do. So it's all Canadian dollar driven, and I got to say, I'm not sure the Bank of Canada has a clue. Mark Rinkert and I watched a interview with Stephen Pelosi, and Stephen Pelosi's comment was that if speculators believe that Toronto house prices are going to go up at 20%, it wouldn't matter if interest rates were 7, they would borrow. And here's my problem with it, okay? Mortgage rates, if you have a floating rate mortgage, the floating rate mortgage is now gone up from 2.5% to roughly 3%. That's a 20% increase. A 5-year term has gone from 2.5% to 3.25%. Looking at the bank mortgage rates today, best available bank rates, 3.25%. Well, I stand corrected. National's beating them by 3.24%. So that's a 30% increase in mortgages. Now, you got to remember in Canada, it's not like the United States where people generally have 30-year fixed mortgages. Floating rate mortgages are becoming increasingly popular. Secondly, very rare, less than 1% of mortgages in Canada are beyond a 5-year term. So by definition of the floating, it's roughly about 60% of mortgages when they go to renew, are going to be reset at a fairly significantly higher rate. We also watched an interview on BNN and said, oh, a quarter point doesn't matter. Well, if interest rates are 10 and rates go up a quarter of a percent, it's probably true. That doesn't matter. So in 1981, what crashed the market, look, mortgage rates were kind of sitting around 13%. They reset. Rates went up to 18% on mortgages. That crashed the real estate market. And because it's the interest portion of your mortgage that matters. But let's remember, 1981, your typical mortgage was, say, $100,000. Oh, honey, oh, my God, this hurts. So 1991, you got people with 200,000 to 300,000 mortgages. Rates go from 10 to 13, a 30% increase. That created significant problems in housing. Here we are today with the interest portion of your mortgage. If you're at 2.5 and now you're at 3.25, we've got the same level of pain. So with the economic data today being more problematic than the second quarter, I think that the markets have it baked in wrong. And when we say markets, the currency markets of the world tend to trade off Bank of Canada, central bank headlines. But the other markets see something different in the tea leaves. If you at the beginning of quarter number 2 bought shares in Royal Bank, Canada's biggest lender, blue chip, the gold lion, -7% in your portfolio today. So the bank stockholders are beginning to get a little worried about the real estate. Bank of Commerce since the beginning of second quarter, -10. Bank of Montreal, -11. The biggest subprime lender in Canada, Home Capital, we've talked about this before, -46. We got a problem. But the second biggest one, called Equitable Group, that also didn't get mortgage fraud, didn't get any securities investigation, is -32%. So the tea leaves are being read very, very differently between the world currency markets. My own personal account, I have some Canadian dollars. I took every bit of Canadian dollar, and I have forex them to the United States. I don't know where we're going in the next 1 to 2 months, but this, where we are today, reminds me very much of 2012. Now, that was 4 years ago. We tend to forget, and we've had a heck of a run. But 2012, our clients typically came in around 2%. The Canadian dollar was extremely strong. We looked at some data. We said, I don't see it. We positioned in the United States. As a result of a very strong Canadian dollar, our investments did well, but we came out for the year at plus two. This is setting us up just like 2012, and you cannot just go up at 13, 12, 15% a year. You need to have some adjustments where you can sit and reorganize your portfolio. It's a necessary evil. But I feel very strongly that we're in the right spot. A little bit shocked at the what they call in our industry hawkishness, which means strong belief in such a strong economy and raising rates. But I think we're at the C point in change where there's a problem in housing. Just to give you some numbers, new home sales. I mean, detached houses are -57% of volume activity. House prices down 20.5%. As a whole, but new home sales. Now, I've got to remember, there is 20,000 new single-family houses in construction under the Toronto region. The total number, and I don't have the August numbers yet, but total new home sales in July, 146, which represents 136 months of inventory. When you get above 10 months of inventory, Houston, you have a problem. We're at 136. So that means that if we didn't build another house in Toronto, it would take 11 years to soak up the inventory. Now, maybe that's just a knee-jerk summer low. I'm sure it is. But the reality is the supply and demand equations have completely changed. There's no longer bidding wars. Speculators are nervous. So, you know, what are we doing in our accounts? So, I don't want to harp too much on that. That's the reason, and I'm happy to talk to anyone one-on-one. I just want to get through the conference call if I'm not answering your question. What are we doing? So, as I mentioned in the last call, we really like Canadian preferred stocks. We think we're 60% of the way there, but there's more upside. Those are typically, since we bought for our clients, up 10 to 20%. Because guess what? We bought floating rate preferred. All our clients, the preferred, the dividends are surging higher. So all of a sudden, they become a very hot commodity. As I mentioned, Bell Canada, they started buying in the 14. I told you on the conference call, it was a buy at 16, it's 18.5. Intrinsic value today is about 20. If rates go up again, they're $21 to $22. I'm not sure rates will, but even today at 18.50, they're worth 20, 21 bucks. I got to tell you about a little stock. Again, I mentioned on these conference calls a year and a bit ago, I mentioned American Homes for Rent. We've made 25% in that. The Canadian Pref have been good. But talk about a stock that we've been buying, and it's a closed-end fund, and it's a private lender called Prospect Capital. And we've owned that stock before. Many of you recognize it because we bought it at 7, we sold it in the 9s. The net asset value is about $9.35. It's a closed-end fund. They do nothing but lend companies privately. And these are typically companies, say, $50 to $100 million companies. Banks don't want to lend to them. They just want to do mortgages. Banks don't want to lend to them. They're not big enough to access the bond market. So they go to these private lenders. Those are typically being loaned out at about 7, 8%. They're pretty solid. They're risky. You diversify it. The yield on it is 72 cents. And again, so that's just under 8% based on the net asset value. We're buying it in the high sixes, which means it's over 30% discount to its net asset value. You've got the net asset value is what drives the bus in terms of yield. The yield is just shy of 11% because we're buying at such an enormous discount. In my opinion, I think we're going to see a 10 to 15% appreciation in the stock. I don't care, but I do think you're going to get at least your yield because the discount is so high. Ironically, again, U.S. data looks far more sustainable despite Trump. U.S. GDP is coming in at 3. Household balance sheets continue to improve. In Canada, they continue to pile on debt. In the United States, household indebtedness has been continually dropping. I think U.S. can easily withstand a few more rate increases without any problem in the economy. And again, it's not a vote of Trump. It's a vote of the businesses. And the stock market tends to react on a very, very short-term basis to political statements, but at the end of the day, the stock market weighs the level of interest rates against the profits and the dividends of those companies. And then we're seeing absolutely decent profit growth. If Canada was so strong, why is the Toronto Stock Exchange minus 2% for the year? Again, Canadian dollar, I wish we were in Canada, but what would we have bought? Bonds, -3. Stock, -2. So, again, challenging year, interesting one, but Dave LaPointeman hasn't changed, and my view, maybe I have more resolve, because I've been warning about a housing bubble for years, and now we have Bank of Canada, mortgages, people are going to renew their mortgages, and they're going to have to fork over 20% more. Reading the Financial Post yesterday, there's a survey by the Payroll Association of Canada that found that 47% of people in Canada could not make pay their bills, could not pay their bills if their paycheck was delayed even 1 week. There was a separate survey that showed that 41% of Canadians live within $200 a month of their budget. So where are people going to get this extra money for their million-dollar mortgages that are coming due? Again, very low interest rates, borrowed $1 million, but rates go from 2.5 to 3.5. Honey, our mortgage rate is up $600, $700 a month. This is a game changer, and I'm not sure that Canadians could withstand much more rate increases, where, quite frankly, the United States will probably be very slowly raising rates for a long time to come. The rates will be on pause in the United States because of two hurricanes coming in. That'll depress economic activity. But then when we look at the fourth quarter of the United States, going into early next year, hurricanes create a pause in activity, and then they create a boom. If we look at the Kelowna fires, Kelowna housing prices took off. Every guy's construction guy is making double their wages. They're in hot demand. Houston area is going to have to be rebuilt. There is going to be an influx of people building. There is estimated up to 500,000 cars. That's just the Houston one. 500,000 cars that will need to be replaced. I mean, this is a bonanza for economic activity. So if you look forward, the United States is going to be some shockingly high numbers. And there's a massive, there's billions of dollars being moved from Berkshire Hathaway and the Axis Capitals of the world to houses and cars and construction and new televisions and all kinds of things. So I would suggest stay the course. It's a little bit painful. We need to look at our portfolios not in bottom line, but what the U.S. dollar. And then if we really thought the Canadian dollar was going to go up to 90 cents, we would react. I feel very strongly that if we go to the end of 2018, we're going to see a very weak Canadian dollar because its retail sales have been driving the bus, and already house price declines in Ontario are hurting retail sales. Again, didn't show up in second quarter data, but it is certainly showing up today, which is going to be the third quarter and then the fourth quarter. So there's a lot of the things that I'm excited about where we are. We are not at the end of this economic cycle. The yield curves have not inverted, which means that we have a ways to go. This is the beginning of the tightening cycle. I would say it's like 2005. The market peaked in 2007. So we're not going to set ourselves up for 4 years of growth like we did in 2012, but we'll set ourselves up, I think, for two more years. That being said, I've gone over my limit again. Operator, can you open it up? And I've got Fletcher Hemmons and Mark Rinkert with me, too. So if I don't know the answer, maybe someone will.
Sure. Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up a question, please press 01 on your keypad. So we'll give everyone a few seconds to queue up your question.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have about 6 questions right now.
Okay.
Our first question is from Elizabeth Harrison. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing? It's Elizabeth and Michael Harrison.
Hi, guys.
As you know, we made a sale in April, which probably put into our account the biggest single deposit that we've ever made anywhere by selling recreational property. At that time, the Canadian dollar was low, so I think with your advice, we kept most of everything in American currency investments, some very short-term, some the long-term. Now, today we just got a note on the TV that Canadian dollar was up to 82 in the bit today. What should we be doing with that?
Michael, I will assure you that when that money came in, when the dollar was so low, we converted very, very little because we felt the Canadian dollar was way underpriced. So most of that went into Canada, and we've only recently, at this high level, converted it. So I'm happy to go through that individually, but don't have to worry.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, David.
Okay.
Thank you. Moving on to our next question. It is from Harris Reck. Please go ahead.
Hello, David. I really appreciated your commentary. One thing you didn't mention was the projected deficits for the Canadian government. How do you see that impacting, if any?
Oh, listen. Happy to go through that. I mean, that's just one of the upcoming problems we're going to have. I mean, Ontario is a train wreck. And, you know, Catherine Wynne, I don't know if you like her or not, but at the end of the day, you know, there's wind. I drive up to Collingwood a couple of weeks ago, go visit my dad. Windmills everywhere. Hydro rates have been soaring. They're running massive deficits right now. What is going to happen when the real estate activity, when the land transfer tax is at 4% in Toronto, they're bringing $40,000 every time a million-dollar property is transacted. They're bringing in PST and GST in Toronto on every new million-dollar condo of 13%. So property sales are generating up to 17% of tax revenue. It's off the charts, and they still can't balance the books. We're looking at significant deterioration in provincial revenues, including, you know, really across the board. So the problem in Canada is not federally. There's plenty of room to run up deficits. It's provincially, which is a disaster. It's not as big a problem as the household deficits, which, you know, again, your house price is going up 32%. Nobody worries about, you know, you defaulting on your mortgage, but there is going the bank once again took down their loan loss provisions, and people aren't buying it. Why do you think commerce is down 10% since the second quarter? They had recorded a record profit. Why? Because people are a little skeptical of surging no CMHC insurance, non-insured mortgage growth. People are kind of getting skeptical. If you bought that house in Toronto at 1.7 in April and it's worth 1.2 today, there's a high propensity to be a problem. Anyway, we'll happy to talk about that at length, but I want to get through some more questions. Okay, operator, is that good enough?
Yeah, that's fine, David. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And we have three more questions in the queue, and I'll just give everyone a quick reminder on how to queue up. If you'd like to queue up, please press 01. Our next question is from Elizabeth Lincoln. Please go ahead.
Good morning, David.
Hi.
I just wondered if you had considered investing in legal medical marijuana grow-ups.
That's a simple one, no.
Okay.
It's not my cup of tea. The valuation on the companies generally is off the charts. $1 billion for canopy growth. At the end of the day, I'm not sure if all that different than a hothouse tomato. It's going to be commoditized, and there's still an underground that'll grow it cheaper, and at the end of the day, there'll be fierce competition, and competition drives prices, and they'll be heavily taxed. I just don't see the market's building in so much profit growth. This is not, you know, like buying Apple computers, you know, at $5. It is just not that. So we like dividends, and we like profits that are already there, and let's remember the name of the game is safe investing. That's highly speculative.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Elizabeth. We now have five more questions in the queue. Our next one is from David Thoth. Please go ahead, David.
Yeah. Hi, David. Nice to hear from you again. I must say I got to congratulate you on Restoration Hardware. It's almost as good as medical marijuana in terms of volatility. But but that wasn't my question. My real question was, do you have a strategy for continued decline of the U.S. dollar? I looked at the technical charts. It seems to me that the dollar may retreat to its 2014 lows, or it may continue to retreat. I don't see the U.S. dollar stopping here.
I guess that's what we were just talking about in the call. Just you know, all those data points. So, you know, I talked about GDP in Canada 4.5, and I said, you know, that was the second quarter. House prices were surging 33%. Now they're down 24. It's consumer spending that's driving the bus, and it's consumer indebtedness. So, you know, maybe we can talk about other currencies like the euro or the yen or the Swiss franc, but it certainly isn't the Canadian dollar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, if you look at the U.S. dollar index, there is no real indication that it's reached its downside, let's put it that way. That's what I was looking at.
We'll agree to disagree on that.
Okay. Okay, well, let's hope it hangs on there.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, David. Our next question is from Lenora Gates. Please go ahead.
Hi, Lenny.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Great.
Nice to hear your voice, and thank you for your time and information this morning. The question I have is, we've talked a lot about the Canadian and the U.S. dollars. Is there any strategy around foreign investment, and I'm thinking more European foreign investment as opposed to Asian foreign investment?
Absolutely. We've been increasing Europe. Europe, again, is a loser to Canadians with the euro. Canadians have been stronger than the euro. It's an excellent time to be in Europe. You know, the valuation of European stock with an economy that, you know, it's a basket case, but the economic data is coming off the bottom and growing even faster than the U.S., and valuations are cheaper. So, very constructive on Europe, somewhat constructive with Japan, and skeptical of emerging markets, where as the Fed continues to raise rates, if we look at 1997, I'll just remind everyone, in 97, the Thai baht crisis crashed many currencies in Asia. 1998, the Latin American crisis with a default of Mexico and Argentina. And 1999, the Russian default. When the U.S. begins to raise rates, and they're slow, they're putting it down the road. People don't like Trump, but the United States will very slowly raise rates, and that's very difficult for emerging markets because capital begins to flee back to the United States when that happens. But good question. I'm happy to talk about it one-on-one.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Steve Anderson. Please go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Steve. Yes, good morning. Hi, David. Good morning. Thanks so much for the informative session this morning. And I was curious with your observations of post-storm recovery that is inevitable in the United States. I was wondering if you see some benefit to positions that you're already on with respect to or in with respect to American stocks, or are you planning to make some moves or changes to anticipate these?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, we already own some car parts and cars. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a surge in car sales. I mean, I guess the Home Depots of the world and the restoration hardware, you know, all have to be rebuilt. So probably a very good question from a macroeconomic perspective. You know, certainly worth considering.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Steve. And we have three more questions in the queue. Our next one is from Frank Sheen. Please go ahead, Frank.
Good morning, David.
Hi, Frank.
I'm just a poor old broken down carpenter, and I don't fully understand all this financial talk or the meaning of it. I judge my portfolio just every month. Is it up or is it down? And you and I talked about this recently. When I looked at it here the other day, it was down again considerably, and it's got me very nervous. Should I be as heavy in U.S. stock as what you've got me there, or should we be looking
at... This was the whole point of the call, and again, I'm happy to do it, Frank, one-on-one.
Yeah.
When you say you're down, Canadian value of your account is up, the U.S. is up, and the total value is down because you're reflecting, if you've got $100,000 in the United States, that was $135,000 Canadian dollars. Now $100,000 in the United States is $121,000. It's still $100,000 U.S. dollars. But the value, if you look at it and click on what's the value in Canadian, and this is the whole point of my call, I feel very strongly that the Canadian dollar will likely in a year be back to probably 72. I mean, it's just a reversal in the Bank of Canada. I think Stephen Pelosi is reckless. I think we've got a slowing housing market based on Catherine Wynne's all the foreign buyer tax and rent controls and all the 16 measures to cool housing, and we've got the Bank of Canada raising rates, and it's the raising rates that is causing the Canadian dollar to go up, and I think we're in a problem already in Canada. So anyway, I you and I can have another conversation about U.S. versus Canada.
I have one
more. Where do we go in Canada? Bonds? It's disaster. Stock down. It's a difficult year when the Canadian dollar is rising rapidly. Again, and it's hard to compare. Like, you got to kind of compare year over year, because if we look year over year, we're up, what, 8-9%. If you compare for the calendar, many people are zero. But if you compare against May, you go, oh, I'm down. It's just markets ebb and flow. Volatility in stocks is near a 40-year low. Volatility in currencies is near a multi-decade high. Low interest rates is wreaking havoc. Money is flooding around the world with can't figure out where to go. Most, like the old National Bank, most money managers are dictated to have a minimum 40% of fixed income, and it's fleeing all over the world looking for somewhere to go where I can get some yield. So when Canada raised rates, it just created this influx. People have no clue. Now, what's going to happen when the headlines begin to weaken because housing's weakening? Canadian dollar's going to go down. It's just that simple. So this would be a very poor time to buy Canadian dollars. Wouldn't recommend buying Canadian. Again, we'll set up a time. You guys,
one more
you
quick.
I can talk again.
Korean business.
Okay, Frank, let's do this one-on-one so that I can get through a couple more questions.
Okay.
I don't mean to cut
you
off.
I'll call in a couple of days.
Okay.
Thank you, Frank. Two more questions in the queue. Our next
okay,
one is...
We just got time for two, so we don't need to know how many people
okay.
in the queue all the time.
Perfect. So our next one is from Steve Harriger. Please go ahead.
Hi, David. Actually, my question was going to be exactly what Lenora asked you about Europe and other areas, and you've answered the question very well.
Both great questions. Yep. Okay.
That's fine. You can go on to the next one.
Right.
Thank you. And our next one is from George Brandak. Please go ahead.
Hi, George.
Good morning. Oh, hi, David. What about gold has increased with the Korean crisis and other political crises and Trump. What do you see it doing in the future?
Like the North Korean crisis and things like that?
Those things have increased the price in gold and concern, but crises come and go, and what is your...
We recently increased our gold holdings in July. Because we saw gold as exceptionally cheap. So I don't know. Call us crazy, George, but I like that little bit of gold every once in a while, especially when it gets relatively cheap and then lighten it up.
Sort of.
I'm not as excited as I was a month and a half ago when gold stocks have gone up about 11-12%. But I think it's an important part of the strategy. There's an old strategy called a permanent portfolio, which says, you ought to always have some gold. It's the thing that somewhat shelters you if nuclear warheads fly. Shouldn't laugh about it, but that's what you want to have. And by the way, the best performing asset this year of everything I made is gold, even for Canadians with a Canadian dollar up. Everybody soured on it. I got many, many calls. Let's just get rid of it. I don't like gold. Gold stocks are up handsomely and gold is up. So it's in a year where it's tough to make money, the one thing is gold. What's wrong with that? We agree. Okay, listen. Thanks, everyone. I'm sure you didn't get all the questions, but that's enough time. So please email me questions, set up a call. Happy to go through it on your portfolios. And I thought it was important to sort of say what's going on and do we need to change strategies or not. And I'm trying to make the case that it's not the time to change because I'm not sure what the Bank of Canada is up to, but they're just reacting to second quarter, which was quite a while ago, and things have changed. So that's great, everyone. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon. Thanks, operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Poitvin Group conference call. Thank you for your participation, and have a nice day.
Thank you.